Dennis Goodman, Reel 2. So I suppose now internment is coming up, isn't it?
From Lang Shadow and Bechtel, I'm from Lookwell Dark, and I was living in Gloucester Place. And one morning, at 6 o'clock in the morning, there was a knock at the door, and it was a police officer and asking, saying, "Why would you please get dressed and accompany us and take the bag, whatever you wish to take. It cannot be too much, but I had very little. I took everything I had, of course, in school. I was taken to the local police station from the, where I protested and said I had been in front of a tribunal, which the tribunal was at school, and I had been classified as, I can't remember anymore what it was called, as a friendly enemy alien, as a refugee of a refugee status. And so he said, "Well, I am sorry, but we have scrapped it all. We are bringing everybody in." This was at the time of Dunkirk, which had influenced these things at the time. There was an enormous fifth column scare. And what had actually happened, they arrested the people who were more loyal than the average person, because they had something really, they knew what it was about, didn't they? I assumed then that one would go through a screening process and that I would be released within 3 days. But we were taken to, from the police station to Kempton Park. I stayed at Kempton Park, I think, overnight, and was then taken by train to Highton, Mr. Wilson's ex-constituency, where there was camp partly out of, I think, unfinished houses. It wasn't a housing estate, but I was accommodated. The youngsters were accommodated in tents. The morning after, there was a parade of all the internees, and the officer in charge was in the Major Colonel, I can't remember what, so I could look it up, of course, said, "Would everyone under the age of 18 take one step forward?" So this is where I learned that one should never take any step forward. So my name was taken as under 18, and then I learned that these names were taken to fill already a transport to overseas. Now, I had learned that, I think we got to earlier, that a ship to Canada called the Andorra Star had been sunk with an enormous loss of life. Now, the survivors actually were brought back to Highton, and then some of them were put on the same ship as we were. I went to the commanding officer and said, "I'm sure that the Home Office would clear me within a matter of days and that I didn't want to go overseas." So he put his arm on my shoulder and said, "Look," and I decided that I would send, that I would fill this transport, the space we have left, with people under 18, with young people, who will have a much better chance to survive overseas, because I think the war's lost. So I said, I pleaded with him to lower there, and I said, if you were my own son, this is what I would do to you. To him. So after, I think we were in Highton for 3 days, I was found myself being marched along the Liverpool dock side, and there's people actually cheering at us, we wore gas masks. When we got to the foot of the gangway, the gas masks were just torn off. We were walked on top of the ship, onto the first deck, where we were searched, and everything was removed, of value was removed from us into so-called bags, disappear. I mean, there was a lot written about, of course, and the value in those days of what was, etc., had been stolen was during the searches and on the ship subsequently was about £35,000. But you know, if you take 1940, £35,000, so, and multiply it by what this would be in days, a large sum, of course, today would probably be a million or so,
Yes. Before you tell me more about the Dunera, which I hope you're going to do, while we're in England, as it were, could you tell me about the conditions, first of all, in Kempton Park? You know, when you were taken there, albeit for a very short time, what, you know, was the sort of organisation like there?
I think very good. I mean, reasonable for all of us. There was bedding provided. I remember, the people didn't stay there for long, you know, they shifted in and out. It was in transit camp, right? So there was straw bedding provided. And I remember we slept under the stands. But it was. I don't remember the detail. It was not any kind of experience which you really remember, except the first impact of internment. But we were very well treated, absolutely fine.
Yes.
There was no complaint about the treatment in Highton, for instance. There was no complaint about everything. This was right. The trouble started when we were taken aboard the ship, right? And, the easiest way to describe it, I know when you saw yesterday's Daily Telegraph about the football hooligans, the photograph, and you were dealing with, the guards, came, from the Pioneer Corps, and I'm afraid this educational standards at that time, still today, and unfortunately in some respects, of people in the Pioneer Corps were low. And I can hardly, at best compare them to football hooligans. it was about the same. People themselves were not bad, but they just didn't know any better, and to tease and be cruel, didn't go to extremes. But there was just no thought in the commanding officer, and that had Colonel Scott, was literally egging out, said, "I'm going to close and turn blind eyes." And what had happened? When we were taken aboard the ship, we were then, there was the front part of the ship and the back part. I was in the back part. I remember just going down the staircase into what had been converted cargo holds. The ship had been converted into a troop ship, but it took I think twice or two and a half times the number of internees than it would have normally carried troops, there was one gang entrance to the holds, and this was with barbed wire, covered with barbed wire, and there was one lock to it, and under control of a guard, and if the boat had been torpedoed, then the doors would open and everybody would have drowned, and even if it had, they could not have got through it, and the boat was torpedoed twice, but fortunately the torpedoes did not hit. Except for searches, we were confined amongst ourselves. The impact on a 17-year-old boy, I was 17 then, wasn't so hard. I could sleep on the floor, I could sleep on a hammock. It didn't hit me as hard. Of course, you remember the things. When you were allowed on deck, an exercise period of either half an hour or an hour, and you that was that, and you never had to run down the deck. And you were not supposed to walk. And then the guards enjoyed, and you had to go barefooted. And then the guards enjoyed themselves from time to time by topping beer bottles, you know, so that you there was glass on the deck. So they'd be very careful of that. But you know, this you relegate out into the background, you know, because the things that were going on at that time in war were so terrible. I mean, the commanding officer of the ship was court-martialed, this Colonel Scott. Was court-martialed. It's the medical officer of the ship, much credit is due to him, because he reported what had been happening on the ship, and as soon as he got to Australia,
How about your sort of food situation? Were you given, you know, adequate food on that journey?
Yes, there was adequate food. It was not very brilliant, but it was food. You know, and again, this, you know, it didn't hit me so hard as it, you know, hit the older people.
Did you know where you were going?
No, right? We thought first that we would be going to the Americas, and we were all guessing where the ship was going. Then we arrived in Freetown. First in Freetown, Sierra Leone, then in Takoradi, Ghana. So we then guessed that we could not be going to Canada, and we assumed that we might be going down to South Africa, and where actually we stopped and took aboard people who were actually German residents of South Africa and some members of the Nazi Party, and this was quite, they were quite different kettle of fish than the refugees which had been put on ship, aboard the ship in England. There was, I have the numbers, but they were, the largest element, of course, was about 2,000 refugees, then there were a few hundred Italians, and the Germans which were taken aboard the ship. The Italians actually were completely innocent. They were mostly restaurateurs from London, you know, so, who were not at all politically in any way. Their loyalties also probably lay more with England than with Mussolini.
Yes. Were the young men, you know, from what you've said, the young men were kept away from the older people, is that right?
No, not on the ship, not on the ship. But quite obviously, young people formed their own groups. But, you know, this is more yet in the camps in Australia than actually on the ship.
Yes. How do you think you compared your morale? You know, you've explained you were young men and you had, you know, this sort of much more free and easy attitude. How would you compare with the older men, their morale? Did you see any evidence?
Oh, terrible, you know, because they associated all this with persecution and all the ways, They had gone through, many of the old people had gone through those terrible things in Germany and came to England maybe in 1990, just before the outbreak of war. There were some who were much longer than you, but, you know, those who came just before the outbreak of war, the persecution in Germany. So they said this was almost a continuation of the process. You know, I said to myself, get to Australia, I'll get out in Australia, or I somehow will get back to England, you know, so that I viewed it differently.
Well, did you witness any acts of desperation? For instance, did anyone try to commit suicide?
Yes, there were suicides, there were suicides. Or amongst old people, not amongst young people.
And these searches, when you said you were down in the holds, the only sort of check on you were the searchers. You know, having taken stuff from you when you got on the ship, did they continue to come round?
Yes, they continued to come round in searches of the decks.
Did it, was anything taken from you?
I had absolutely nothing Australia. But I had, in my everything disappeared, my luggage disappeared. I had one or two things, two supplies and stuff, the clothes I was in, but I had some odds and ends, but that was all.
And you never saw them again?
No, but I mean, you know, I didn't even, it was that. It's very interesting, the psychological frame one was in the time, you know, when after we were, some time after we were, after we had arrived in Australia, statistics or claims were collected of what had been lost, you know, right? And I didn't, in those days when I said to those days, the war is so serious, you know, that one wouldn't want to take any money, you know. At 17, I was so patriotic, and the whole thing is so, it was so incongruous. So then, when we arrived in Australia...
Yes, before you go to Australia, if you wouldn't mind me asking a bit more, what were the sort of sanitary arrangements like on the Dunera, you know, with so many men?
I only know that there were open toilets and they were terrible. You know, there were stalls of toilets which had been installed, open stalls of toilets. Mm.
And could you wash and shave? You know, were you shaving then? And
yes, there was shaving facilities. They passed round, but I don't think you were allowed to keep them. You know that journey to Australia afterwards, you know, one just excluded
them. Is that right? You want to forget it?
One wanted to forget it, one wanted to get on with things, you know, and right?
How about these Nazis who were brought aboard? Yes. Were they kept separately?
They were separately. I think they were in the front part of the ship, but they had some contact with the other, you know, people who had been put in the front part of the ship.
And the Italians, did you see much of the Italians?
Well, they were also in the other part of the ship, you see, so, so afterwards I met one, two, even though they were kept in different camps. But the impression I had of the Italians, were that most of them shouldn't have been, you know, they should have been released because of that. So. In that time, understand, there was panic at that time. But you know, the interesting thing is the decision making process of internment was at least until recently, one could not get at the cabinet minutes because they were supposed to be 30 years. And apparently, it is 100 years. It's the 100 years. It's put under the 100 year rule. Now, to me, this is completely incomprehensible why it should be. I don't like that, and said I was going to spend some time to go to the public record office and see which documents are banned. You know, because the cabinet minutes now of 1940 should be made available.
So here you are approaching Australia. Can you remember your first impressions, you know, when you docked in Australia?
Well, we didn't see much of the actual docking process because we were locked in the holds, you know, but then, of course, and I must say, I've been back since, you know. I've been back lots of times in Australia, but I've been back for the 50th anniversary, of the arrival of the ship. So I've seen exactly the view, right? That was on the docks where we arrived, right? And which is at the, you know, the Sydney Harbour Bridge. It's a very impressive, right? It's a very impressive sight. And I must say that we were very pleasantly surprised because, right,
when we had were taken onto the quay and then to the train. There were Australian troops who immediately provided us with good food. And there was ample food. But we were then put into this train, a comfortable train, and were taken to the end of the railway line, which was Hay in New South Wales, which is on the border of the desert.
What was their behaviour to you, the behaviour of the Australian troops? Was it different from the...
Quite different, than the troops aboard the ship. Although in 1940 Australia was not the cosmopolitan venue it is today. Quite different, it is totally different, very inward looking, very prejudiced, very small town communities. Totally different today. Even the community in Hay is quite different than it used to be. I met a lot of people of Hay, when was it, 5 years ago, at this 50th anniversary celebration. But the people were there, but the troops were nice. They didn't quite understand what, you know, what we were. They couldn't, you know. And there was continuous wonderment. But we arrived in after a train journey, which didn't do away, which was fine. There was no we arrived in Hay, and we were greeted by a sandstorm. In fact, I can show you some photographs of the sandstorm because I took them, because we had the same kind of sandstorm during the anniversary celebration. You know, it's right at the edge of the desert, you know, so we were greeted by that sandstorm, and we were taken into a camp with huts, with rows of barbed wire surrounding it. They provided ample food. They guarded the camp, and then expected, the initiative probably came from the internees, to administrate themselves. So I don't know whether you've been told about the internal administration of the camp.
Would you please explain it, how the camp was administered?
Well, we formed a parliament, literally, where each hut supplied two delegates into that parliament, which discussed the problems of the camp until he goes through half the night. You know, it was very articulate. And you must remember that the 2,000 refugees which arrived on the Dinera at that time, this was the first convict convoy since the convict shipments which had stopped 150 years earlier. It was certainly the 2,000 people aboard the Dunera were most certainly the most talented people Australia had ever received on one boatload. You had university professors, you had doctors, you had lawyers, you had people from every walk of life, therefore well qualified to organize themselves into a community. Therefore, within a very short time, people who had been put in the camps, there were two camps, 7 and 8, I was in camp number 8, had organized themselves into a community administered in the same way as communities elsewhere. You know, it had that kind of structure. Of course, money. Some of the internees had money, and thereby enabled others to earn some money. Money was being sent to them, And so, I mean, these were not big sums, but they were, there was money. So that, but the camp authorities did not allow actual money to come into the camps. They were credits. So what happened? The bank, the camp itself, started to print notes, right, of their own, for tender within the camp. So really, literally fiscal system developed within the camp. I was involved in newspaper distribution and selling that, but the sort of thing I did in camp, apart from participating in lectures, because there were lectures, from all fears. You had the opportunity formed to participate in educational activities. But you know, it's really quite incredible if one starts thinking back. I was given a job. I was asked, you know, I was actually asked by the commanding officer to give English lessons to troops. You know, because many people in the Australian forces at that time, you know, were just read and write. You know, it was that. So I was actually sitting down with troops which were guarding us, teaching English. And then I formed a Boy Scout group, which, I still got some of the mementos there, which was, I think, the only Boy Scout group in an internment camp to be officially recognized. And with Imperial Boy Scout, their headquarters here in London, and from whom I had a letter of introduction, and with the help, of course, of a local scoutmaster.
So did you wear uniforms?
No, the uniforms. Only the
how did you know what to do with them? Did you form your own?
Oh, we had, I think we had, we had a scarf. Mm.
And your own programme, you know, because I know Boy Scouts get badges and things, don't they? Did you have a similar sort of system?
In the camp?
Not with badges, no. But before, I was in the Boy Scouts at school.
Right? Oh, so you would have known.
So I knew this.
Yes. Huh? Oh, no, that is really what I wanted to know, yes. You know, if you knew the... and you say that was recognised by the scouting people.
Oh, this was recognised by... Imperial, I had a letter of introduction, and it was recognized by that.